tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, old-time radio sitcoms. Later on, we hear the Halls of Ivy, but right now, the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show. Part of NBC's Sunday night lineup at 7:30, 11.5 million people were tuned in to this next broadcast on November 20th, 1949.
Good health to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show. Written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Scharf and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. Phil and Alice have just seen their children in their first school play. While they're waiting outside the school for Phyllis and Alice to come out, they're proudly discussing their children's talent.
Oh, honey, weren't our kids great? I never saw such a terrific acting job. They were positively out of this world. They made that play. If they had to, if it was
now,
the
one... easy, Father, easy. There were other children in the play, you know.
Well, naturally, our kids need stooges. I mean, every star needs a stooge.
I guess you're right. It's like us. I couldn't possibly do my radio show without you.
Well, that's a fine way to talk to the man who took you when you were nothing but a movie star and in 8 short years made you into a successful household drudge. That's the thanks I get for taking you from fleeting prominence into permanent obscurity. I should think at least that
you
would...
How do you do, Mrs. Harris? Oh, hello, Miss Miller. Phil, this is the children's teacher. Miss Miller, this is Mr. Harris. How do you do?
Charmed, to be sure. You know, I've been anxious to meet you, Miss Miller. I want to compliment you on the way you've been learning our kids.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. I, learn them as best I can.
Yeah, well, of course, my kids have an advantage over other children. You see, I assist them every night with their homework.
Oh. Well, then yous is the one what helps them with their grammar, ain't yous?
Alice, we got to get our kids out of this school quick.
Why?
This dame just split a subjunction.
Miss Miller, I thought the play was excellent. Don't you think our children did exceptionally well? Oh, yes. I thought all the children did very well.
You thought the other kids were as good as ours?
Yes, I did.
Oh, Cletus, you better keep away from them blackboards. The chalk dust is clouding your specs. Good as ours. Look, teacher, I want you to know
Daddy,
that my...
Daddy, guess what? I was so good in that play, I'm going to be a movie star. They want to sign me to
a
contract.
Wait a minute now. Take it easy. What are you talking about?
A talent scout from 20th Century Fox saw me in the play, and he wants to put me in pictures. He gave me this card, and he said he's coming over to see you this afternoon, and he wants me to sign a contract.
Hold it a minute now. Let me see that card. Hey, Alice. Phyllis is on the level. This guy is a talent scout from 20th Century. Oh, ain't this wonderful?
I don't know. Phyllis, does he want little Alice, too?
No, he just wants me.
Oh, Phil, this isn't so good. It might have an effect on little Alice.
Well, why? She ain't gonna begrudge your sister a picture career. She ain't no ham.
We'll soon find out. There she is. Alice! Alice, come over here, dear.
Are you calling homely little no-talent me?
Oh, honey, don't talk like that. I'm sorry this happened.
Oh, don't fret about me, Mother. I don't mind not being a movie star. I'll join the French Foreign Legion or something.
Now, look, baby. You were very good in the play, too. Wasn't she, Phyllis?
Yes, Mommy.
In fact, I think she was just as good as you were. Don't you, Phyllis?
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
Now, wait a minute, Phyllis. You just wait a minute. I think she was just as good, too. And Alice? Now, look, baby Alice, I don't want no jealousy in this family. Now, shake your sister's hand and wish her luck.
Very well.
Good luck, Phyllis, dear.
Thanks, Alice. I'm sorry it couldn't be you, but...
Oh, Mommy, she's trying to break my hand.
Let go. Shame on you, trying to hurt your sister.
She's just jealous because I'm prettier.
You are not.
I am, too.
You are not.
I am, too.
Hey, your father used rag curlers.
Oh, that's telling her baby. Wait a minute. I'm her father, and I do not.
Now, come on, Alice. Let's get home so we can be there when that talent scout comes over with the contract.
Hey, Philly's going to be a big star. Oh, that lucky little kid. She's just chock full of beauty and talent, and she gets it all from her father. Oh, Curly, that blue blood line of yours. Younger than springtime, am I?
Yeah.
Softer than starlight, am I? Yeah. Warmer than winter. What do you want?
I'm supposed to sing first this week.
Oh, okay, go ahead. And I was getting into this one so smoothly, just like Dorothy Kirsten.
An old-fashioned walk. I'm just bursting with talk. What a tale could be told if we went for an old-fashioned walk. Let's take a stroll through the park, down a lane where it's dark, and a heart that's controlled may relax on an old-fashioned walk. Miles apart. There's nothing like walking and having a heart to heart. I know a boy who declined, couldn't make up his mind. He was wrapped up and sold, coming home from an old-fashioned walk.
Some couples go for a buggy ride when they start carrying a lot. Others will bicycle side by side out to some romantic spot.
But when you haven't a suit, there's only one thing to do. What a tale could be told if we went for an old-fashioned walk. I know a boy who declined, couldn't make up his mind. He was wrapped up and sold, coming home from an old-fashioned
Gee, honey, just think. Phyllis's name will be up there in lights. I can see the sign now. Little Miss Marker starring Phil Harris's daughter. Honey, she's going to be the biggest thing.
Phil, I don't want her to be in pictures.
Well, that's all right if she don't want to... What? What do you mean you don't want her to be in pictures? This is her chance to be famous and make maybe $5,000 a week. She'll be rich.
Oh, honey, I don't care about the money. I'd rather have Phyllis poor, but normal, like other children.
Well, you can have Alice. She's a poor, normal child. I'll take Phyllis, the one who's rich and abnormal. Gee, honey, this is the chance of a lifetime. Uh-oh, that must be that talent scout now. I'll talk to him. I know how to get around these guys. How do you do, sir? It's a pleasure to meet you. Anybody can see by looking at you that you're a smart, capable, intelligent...
It's me, Philip.
Dull, stupid, no-talent moose.
Who is it, Phyllis? Is it the talent scout?
No, it's the Cub Scout. Weak Chin Willie is here. Hey, Willie, have I got news for you. Phyllis is going into pictures.
Why, that's wonderful. I always knew she had ability.
Of course she has. After all, I'm her father.
Bless her for overcoming that obstacle. Obviously, the child got her talent from her mother. Alice was a great actress in pictures.
Oh, thanks, Willie, but I wasn't a great actress.
Oh, yes, you were.
No, I wasn't.
Yes, you were.
Willie, did you see your sister in Fallen Angel?
No, I didn't.
Well, I did. Let this girl talk.
It wasn't that bad.
Wasn't that bad, huh? That was the only picture ever made that was turned down by television.
Now, look, Bill, I don't want my child in pictures. She's too young, and that's final.
But, honey, don't you see what it... Oh, well, that's probably the talent scout with the contract. What'll I tell him?
Blame it on me. Tell him I won't sign because... Well, tell him she's not really a child. She's a lot older than she looks.
All right, I'll tell him. Sorry, mister, but my wife don't want to sign no picture contract because she's a lot older than she looks.
True. She can always play character parts. Maiden aunts, grandmothers.
All right, Frankie, all
old
right.
Old ladies, old men. Dad, you're married to a versatile woman.
Now, wait a minute, Remley. I'm not talking about my wife. She's not too old for pictures. I'm talking about little Phyllis. She's too old.
Curly, do you mind if I smell your breath?
Okay, if it'll put you on your feet. Don't you understand, Remy? I made a mistake. I thought you were the talent scout who's coming over to sign Phyllis for pictures.
Hey, do you mean it?
Yeah.
Little Phyllis, my godchild, will be a movie star?
Yeah.
Gee, that's what I always wanted her to be. And with me handling her, she'll go places. Just think, she'll have her name up in lights. I can see the sign now. Little Miss Marker, starring Frankie Remley's godchild.
Remley, I already had a sign made.
Oh.
It ain't going to do either of us any good. You see, her mother won't let Phyllis go into pictures.
What has she got to say about it? I've already given my permission.
But Frankie, don't
you... Well, don't stand there. Get the child to the studio. Get her in front of the camera. Right on the set! Fight! Action! Roll them!
Cut!
Well, we shot that scene fast. Who's she working for, Monogram?
All right. Look, Frankie, Alice don't want Phyllis to work because Phyllis is too young.
You're never too young to go to work. You got a big investment in that kid. She's been sponging off of you since the day she was born. When's she going to start paying you back?
Remley, Phyllis is 5 years old.
That's what I mean. How long is she going to keep stalling?
Frankie, parents don't expect kids to pay them back.
I paid mine back when I was a kid.
In cash?
No, not in cash. But when I was 12, I ran away from home, and in appreciation, they canceled the debt. I don't owe him a dime.
Okay, so you don't owe him. Frankie, I want Phyllis to go into pictures, but Alice absolutely refuses to let her work.
Hmm. Well, the government ain't gonna like this. They insist that kids go to work. That's why Congress passed that bill.
What bill?
The child labor law. Make them labor while they're a child. That's the law. You don't know nothing.
Well, I want the kid to work, but Alice ain't going to allow it.
Well, Curly, you can't just give in to Alice like this. It ain't manly.
You're right. I ain't afraid of my wife. I'm going to sign Phyllis to that contract, and I'll make Alice like it.
How?
I'll sign it, but I won't tell her about it.
That's telling her, Curly. Oh, you're not going to tell her. Well, come on, let's wait outside and get this talent scout before he comes in the house. And let me handle the details. As Phyllis's agent, I'll get her a good deal.
Okay. You know, Frankie...
What's that?
You don't know what it means to be a father. I'm proud of Phyllis. She's a beautiful kid.
Yeah.
The old master painter did a great job on her. The old master painter
all
is...
All right, Curly, all right. Don't drag it out. Put the frog to work.
The
master painter from the faraway hills. Painted the violets and the daffodils. He put the purple in the twilight haze. Ended a rainbow for the rainy days. Dreamed of the murals on the blue summer skies. Painted the devil in my darling's eyes. Captured the dreamer with a thousand thrills. The old master painter from the faraway hills. Then came his masterpiece, and when he was through, he smiled down from heaven and he gave you what a beautiful job on that wonderful day. The old master painter from the hills far away. The old master painter from the far away hills painted the violets and the daffodils. He put the purple in the twilight haze. Ended a rainbow for the rainy day. Dreamed up the murals on the blue summer sky. Painted that devil in my darling's eyes. Captured a dreamer with a thousand thrills. The old master painter from the faraway hills. Then came his masterpiece, and when he was through, he smiled down from heaven and he gave me you. What a beautiful job on that wonderful day. The old master painter from the hills. Far away, far away, far away.
Phyllis, sit down a minute. Mommy wants to talk to you.
Yes, Mommy.
Now, look, Phyllis. I don't want you to go into pictures because, well, I'm thinking of your happiness. A star's life is not all glamour. There'll be heartaches, sacrifices, and suffering.
I know, Mother. But one must experience all of life's emotions if one is to become a great actress.
Oh, get a load of this little ham bone.
Careful what you say, Alice, or I won't make you my stand-in.
Mommy, can't I please kick her in the shins just once?
Now, girl, stop it. Look, Phyllis, if you're in pictures, there are a lot of things you'll have to give up. First of all, you won't be able to go to your school.
I'll be willing to suffer through that.
And there are other things. You won't have time to play with your friends. You'll have to get up early in the morning, and you'll have to go to bed very early every night.
Oh, I don't mind if I... Did you say I have to go to bed early every night? Does that mean I can't see Hopalong Cassidy on television?
That's right.
Then I ain't gonna do it.
Thanks, Phyllis. You're a good girl. Now, all we have to do is talk your father out of it. And I think I know a way. When your daddy comes back, Phyllis, I want you to make him think this has gone to your head. Make him think that you're very impressed with your own importance.
You know something, I got to admit, it was a stroke of genius on your part. Oh, how you handled that, Clyde. Oh, you know something, this contract that I just signed for Phyllis is going to make her a star in no time.
And thanks to me, it's ironclad.
Yeah.
Can't be broken. If I say so myself, I'm a pretty good agent. Now, Alice, I'll have to let her get through with it.
Yeah, come on, let's go in and tell her.
Yeah, you bet.
Hey, Alice. Hey, Alice, where are you? I got great news for you, honey. You're going to really love...
Quiet, Bill. Not so loud, or you'll awaken our little starlet. She left orders not to be disturbed.
What do you mean she left orders? Wake her up, wake her up.
I'm not allowed to do that, Phil. Oh, here comes our little darling now.
Oh. Phyllis, I want to talk to you.
Ah, the calla lilies are in bloom again.
Alice, you better look at this kid. She's got a bone in her throat.
Father, please. Your shouting will shatter my precious little nerves. and I'll be in no condition to make my cinematic debut.
Now, just a minute. You cut that out, or I'll take you across my knee and wail the daylights out of your little debut.
All right, hold it, Curly. You so much as lay one finger on my little client who's going to pay me 10%, and I'll punch you right in the nose.
You stay out of this, Remley. I'll handle my kid. Now, look, baby, just because you're going into the movies, don't let it go to your head. I want you to remain my own sweet little Phyllis.
Father, please. The name is now Ingrid.
Ingrid? Ingrid Harris?
No. Ingrid LaRue.
Ingrid LaRue. I like that.
You would. It sounds like a Swede strip teaser. Now, wait a minute. There's nothing wrong with the name Harris. It's good enough for me, and it's good enough.
Now, look, Philip, won't do you any good to argue. Ingrid has made her mind up. Oh, and by the way, Ingrid wants you to make reservations for her on the Queen Mary.
The Queen Mary? What for?
She's going to Stromboli to make a picture.
Oh, fine, fine. First, my name ain't good enough for her. Now the United States ain't good enough. Look, Phyllis, you stop acting like a spoiled brat, because when you go to school tomorrow, the kids...
Ooh, there'll be no more of that.
Oh, yes, there will. You're still going to school.
But, Father, I can't now that I'm a movie star.
What's that got to do with it?
Does Betty Davis go to school? Does Joan Fontaine go to school? Does Charles Boyer go to school? Which reminds me, Father, call Chuck. We must have him for lunch tomorrow.
That's a... Listen to me. No kid of mine is going to act like this. If going into pictures does this to her, I don't want no part of it.
Do you mean that, Phil?
I certainly do. If there's one thing I can't stand, it's a precocious kid. She ain't going into pictures.
But, Curly, you signed the contract.
You talked me into it, too. And now you're going to get us out of it. Now go over to that studio and get them to break that contract. You better not come back here, Goldstone. And you get it.
Well, Curly, took a lot of talking, but I finally got the studio to release Phyllis from her contract.
Well, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I can't stand, it's having my kid act the way that Phyllis was acting.
Oh, did you have any trouble making him release Phyllis, Frankie?
No, no. Not the way I handled it. All I had to do was make one little concession.
Well, it was worth it. What was the concession?
I showed him a picture of little Alice, and they signed her up instead.
Oh, no! Oh, no! Now little Alice is going to be in pictures?
Lilies are in bloom again. Rally, they are.
I'll rally, tell her, Lily, rally, you'll rally. Rally, rally, rally.
Phil, I just called the studio and told them that both Alice and Phyllis are too young for pictures.
And you're absolutely right, honey.
I don't think so, Curly. Your kids are destined to be actresses.
They are?
Of course. It's incumbent upon them to carry on the glorious traditions of the theater that were started by their illustrious father.
Oh, Frankie, stop it.
Let him alone. Sing me another chorus of that rondelay, Ram. I love them lyrics.
Oh, no. Now his calla lilies are beginning to sprout. Oh, there they are. Rally. Yes.
This program was produced and directed by Paul Phillips. Included in today's cast was Lois Corbin. The part of Frankie Remley was played by Elliot Lewis, and Julius was played by Walter Tetley. Alice Faye appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox.
The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show on Tuned to Yesterday from November 20th, 1949 on NBC. For many years, Phil Harris was the bandleader for the Jack Benny program and completely integral to the comedy act, so much so that he was able to maintain his regular spots on the Benny Show over on CBS while maintaining the NBC broadcast, which happened to air after Benny's broadcast, Sunday nights at 7:30. You're listening to an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now it's on to the Halls of Ivy with Ronald and Benita Coleman from April 7th, 1950 on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitt Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Welcome again to Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Music, as we all know, has always played a large part in college life, and most college presidents enjoy it in all its forms, from the student's flip and poof song through Beethoven's Ninth, right up to that most musical of all sounds, the rustle of a big fat endowment check. Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, the president of Ivy, bows to no one when it comes to music appreciation. In fact, he's even an accomplished performer, something his wife, the former Victoria Cromwell of the English stage, never knew until this evening. At the moment, both are seated on the porch of their home, and Mrs. Hall says,
"That instrument is known as a what?"
"It's known as a recorder."
"No, no, no, the other name you said."
"Well, it's known as a recorder or fiddle flute."
"Sorry, it sounds just as though you were saying fiddle flute."
"I am saying fiddle flute. Fiddle flute."
"Why on earth is it called that?"
"Obviously, because it happens to be a flute equipped with a fipple."
"Oh!"
"Well, I don't know what there is to laugh at. A fipple is merely a plug or stopper in the upper end of it. It's a very ancient and honorable instrument and possessed of a really lovely tone. Would you like to hear it?"
"Very much."
"All right, here goes. You must remember I haven't played in years."
"Well,
you know,
darling, since birth, I've been accustomed only to the finest in fipple flute playing. But I shall lower my exacting standards for this occasion."
"Good. It has a really lovely tone. Now listen. I wasn't even sure I still had it, but luckily I remembered that large trunk in the attic, and there it was, wrapped."
"Toddy, proceed to fipple."
"Well, you see, if you don't think it has a really lovely tone." "Well, that must be Professor Quincannon now."
"Well, don't go in. Then you'll answer it. Did he say you'd be summoned by telephone?"
"I don't remember. No, when he told me I was being considered for membership in this club, I was really bowled over." "Oh, has it rung off?"
"No, Penny's answered it. What's it all about, anyway?"
"Well, it was quite unexpected. Quincannon simply fell in with me as I was walking home the other evening and said he and a few other faculty members were starting this club. The Ivy, once a week chamber music, and Knuckworth Society. I gather we are to meet once a week, play chamber music, and eat Knuckworth."
"Yes, the name is subtly suggestive of that."
"Yes, it is. Well, he said they wanted about a dozen good men. He and the other moving spirits would vote on them all, of course, and asked me if I played any musical instrument. I said yes, the fiddle flute. And he laughed and said he'd be seeing me. Penny... What did he say?"
"Say, sir?"
"Yes, the telephone, just now."
"Oh, he said, listen, baby, don't ask questions. Just come down here with bail money."
"Said Sir Quincannon said that?"
"No, Mum, it was the wrong number."
"Oh." "Thank you, Penny."
"Quite all right, sir. Any time at all."
"I'm almost certain he said the first meeting would start precisely at 8. Well, of course, he may merely stroll over to fetch me, his house being right across the street."
"Perhaps you misunderstood the date. It may not be tonight."
"Oh, well, perhaps it isn't."
"Why don't you play something? Go ahead, fiddle away."
"Very well. Here we go, then. As It has a really lovely tone. Now listen. But the meeting is tonight. Look over there. Professors Warren, Wilder, and Lazar, all carrying instruments. Now, you see, they're turning into quincannons. Good. That means we'll have great fun. They're very convivial fellows. And here comes quincannon to fetch me. Now, don't wait up, darling. I can't say when I'll be back. You never know how these things are going.
Sit down, Polly. It's not time for you to leave.
Well, I mustn't keep quincannon waiting.
He's gone back in the house. He just went into the yard to pick up his evening paper.
Oh.
It's not 8 o'clock yet. Sit down. And while we're waiting, let me hear you play. It seems to me I've heard a rumor that the Piffle Flute has a really lovely tone.
Oh, yes, it has indeed. Now, you just listen. I can't tell you, Victoria, how much I'm looking forward to this evening.
If you're that crazy about Knockworth, Penny will...
No, it's not that. It's just that although I know I have the respect of the faculty, and I think they like me, I'm often afraid that because of my position here, there's inclined to be very little give and take on a human basis. But the mere fact that Quincannon and the others may regard me warmly enough to invite me to join is something that makes me feel almost like one of the boys. I began to suspect I was... I forget the Latin term, but it means a wet smack. Look, Vicky, look. Here come some other club members. There's Shaw, Butler, Cassidy, and Rubin. Oh, look at that lovely case of beer they're carrying. This is going to be a rollicking evening, I know it. Why, those are the liveliest sparks on the campus.
What the heck do we care?
They're really enjoying themselves, aren't they? Now, what about the devil's delaying Quincannon? Are you positive he didn't telephone?
Quite positive. Don't fret, Toddy. Quincannon's the host. He's probably too busy at the moment.
Yes, that must be it, of course. You know, it takes only a moment to telephone.
Well, they may fetch you by some sort of ceremony that has nothing to do with telephones. Or, if it has, the telephone may be out of order. Ours is always out of whack, you know.
Well, not in the last 4 years.
Well, there you are, then. Is it as long ago as that? But at any rate, I'm sure there's a valid reason for the delay.
Yes, his telephone could be out of order.
It often happens.
Yes, a short circuit, for example.
Of course, or even just a bit of that rubber stuff coming off and exposing the wire.
Look, there go Weaver and Hudson. I didn't know Weaver played the tuba. He's very clever.
He must be to keep a tuba secret.
Here comes Quincannon now. No, he's only turned off the porch light.
Hail the gang's all here.
And gone in again. I suppose he's not expecting anyone else.
We don't mean that at all, Toddy. Professor Quincannon is very economical, even frugal man.
Well, you really think that's why
he... Of course.
It isn't 8 o'clock yet either, is it?
Nowhere near it. 2 minutes off.
You don't suppose I've been blackballed, do you?
Oh, why on earth would you be?
Well, they might not think I measure up to chamber music and Knockworth. Here comes Grogan. Vicky, do you suppose that's how I am to be informed by the campus policeman?
Maybe.
Mr. Grogan.
Oh, that's you on the porch, Dr. Hall?
Yes. You don't by any chance bear a message from Professor Quincannon, do you?
I do indeed, sir.
Well, now don't wait up for me, Vicky, darling.
Good evening, sir, and to you,
good
ma'am.
Good evening, Mr. Grogan.
Well, it looks like a great evening shaping up across the way, don't
it? Yes, it really does.
Mm-hmm. But no expense is spared, as the saying goes. You know what I've been doing the past hour? Delivering messages for Professor Quincannon all over Faculty Row. Special hand-printed messages.
Oh, I was wondering why he didn't telephone.
No, he's not a man to do things by halves. But the most special occasion, he says to me, it is. I says to him, it is, indeed, says he to me.
Well, you came just in time. It's 8 o'clock.
It is, indeed. That clock on the chapel hasn't been a minute off in 31 years. Oh, I could tell you a story about that clock. In 1919...
You said you were carrying messages for Professor Quincannon.
I am, sir. He asked me especially not to forget to deliver it to you. Mind you, don't forget, he says to me, it's most important. It is, says I to him. It is indeed, says
well,
he to me.
I'm sure we'd be very grateful if you'd tell us what it is.
Yes, ma'am. Could you spare some mustard for the knockwurst?
Yes. Certainly, I'm on my way over, and I... What was that?
Professor Quintana said he could use some mustard for the knockwurst if he had any to spare. The stores are all closed, says he to me. Are they, says I to him?
Yes, was that the only message?
Why, no, ma'am. No, it's not. I was asked for a loaf of bread, too. Asked you, then. I'm short of bread, he says to me. Are you, says I?
Well, if you'll just go to the side entrance, Mr. Grogan, I'm sure Penny will oblige you.
Oh, well, thank you, ma'am, and good evening. Good evening, sir.
Huh? Oh, yes. Good evening. Well, I suppose I won't be needing this anymore.
What is it?
It's a sour pickle. I thought it might add to the fun. You know, if I suddenly began munching it in front of the brass section, the mouths would have puckered up, you see. And they'd have fluffed notes. And
may I tell you something, Toddy? Dear Toddy, I think you're well out of it. In the first place, Knockwurst never did agree with you.
Why, I was only going to pretend to eat some, just for the sake of form, you know.
Friendship means a great deal to you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does indeed, my darling. Our own little friendships may seem unimportant, but if everyone cultivates his own and seeks new ones, the spread of goodwill, like ripples on a pond, may extend beyond the limits of our vision and go far toward averting the dissolution of my world and yours in a blast of hate.
Oh, I do agree with you, Toddy. Mm-hmm.
Living as we are today in the shadow of a man-made cloud, shaped like a poisonous toadstool, it behooves us as individuals to see that friendship doesn't become the sole concern of wall motto publishers and sofa cushion embroiderers. And if I sound more like Gabriel with a trumpet than Bill Hall with a fiddle flute, I'm sorry.
I never did get a chance to hear it.
What, the trumpet? Oh, the fiddle flute. Yes, of course I'll play something then. Yes, it has a really lovely tone. Now just listen. What would you like to hear?
We find a saddened Dr. Hall sitting on the front porch of their home with Mrs. Hall, listening to the faint sounds of festivity emanating from Professor Quincannon's house across the street. Mrs. Hall says,
"Let it out, Toddy. You've been sitting there stewing for ages. Let it out. Chew up the scenery. Ham it up."
Well, I was thinking about Quincannon. If next time we meet there should be any embarrassment, he might think it rather childish of me. On the other hand, if I lean over backwards to show I'm not offended, he's apt to think I'm trying to cozy up to him in order to get into the club.
Poor Toddy. You're on the horns of a dilemma, aren't you?
I am. You'd think, wouldn't you, with all the great scientific advances of the last few centuries, someone would have developed a hornless dilemma by now. If it were a hornless dilemma, I could make short shrift of it.
Really? What is a short shrift?
It's an old family recipe. Grandma Hall's short shrift was famous for miles around. She was just about to make a fortune with it when suddenly the fashion changed. And everyone began to demand long shrift. Then, one day, how much longer are they going to make that awful racket over there? Don't they realize it's time people were in bed?
It's only 9:30.
Oh, well, some people might be going to bed. Anyway, it's unbecoming when supposedly mature men, responsible members of the faculty, behave like a lot of schoolboys. They've done nothing but make noise and laugh all night. Something ought to be done about it.
I agree. Something certainly ought.
A good mind to phone Grogan. Tell him to go over there and break it up.
I was thinking of another line of action.
What? Phone the town police?
No. I was thinking you ought to go over there, fiddle flute in hand. Tell them it sounds as though they were having a grand time. And ask very honestly and directly if you might join them.
Oh, my dear, I couldn't. I wouldn't. I haven't been elected. Don't you understand? They might not want me.
But they would if they knew you wanted them.
Ah. I don't want them. Sitting up all night. Playing interminable choruses of McNamara's band. Well, that's not my idea of a good time.
Toddy.
I infinitely prefer a quiet walk or a good book.
Toddy, you've attracted Professor Heathcliff's attention.
Heathcliff? Well, don't tell me that blister is a member of Quincannon's club.
He kills you. He's coming up the walk.
That you up there, Skipper?
Yes, to my sorrow.
And how are you tonight, fair lady?
Quite well, thank you. It's a lovely night. If you were out enjoying it, please don't let us keep you.
Oh, not at all, not at all. I was merely strolling past to see if Professor Quincannon actually was indulging in an infantile exhibition, as I'd heard that he intended.
Had he asked you to join?
No. I was eligible, of course. I play the glockenspiel, you know.
Oh, I didn't know.
Oh, good heavens, yes, Skipper. I've played the glockenspiel for 30 years.
You must be tired by now.
I beg your pardon, fair lady.
I said I've always admired the glockenspiel.
Yes. As I say, I was eligible, but I let him know so definitely by my manner that I was not the sort to be interested in juvenile horseplay that he never even asked me. What a hideous sound they were making. Don't they realize it's time people were going to bed?
It's only 9:30.
Well, some people might be going to bed. I'm highly gratified to see you're not over there, Skipper. You're the same sort of person I am.
Oh, I am? Am I?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. More the cerebral type. For us, the quiet walk, the good book, the solitary meditation.
The sour grape.
You spoke, fair lady.
I said, I think our traipse along upstairs is getting a bit chilly.
Oh, well, then I'll be moving along. Good night, fair lady. Good night, Skipper. I hope you can sleep with all that fun, that noise going on.
Good night. Did I sound like that a few minutes ago?
Yes. Have you changed your mind about going over there?
Well, I won't try to pretend I don't want to. I've always detested make-believe, haven't you?
Oh, darling, you're asking someone who was once an actress. And you haven't always detested it. I can remember at least one instance when you enjoyed it immensely. At least you seem to.
When was that?
Oh, backstage one night in London, shortly after we met.
Of course, I remember in your dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to mention that I'd never been behind the footlights. And you took me onto the stage. I stumbled over a prop on the way, I remember.
It was a bench from the garden scene.
Yes, and then you turned on the moon. That was an inspiration. We even had music. That there was a street musician playing somewhere outside. I can still remember the tune. It went like this.
Thank you, you're remembering that. I've forgotten we ever heard it that night in the theater. It came through so faintly. Well, how do you like it from this side of the footlight?
It's awfully big, isn't it? Listen to the echoes. Far more mysterious and romantic than from the audience side. Think of all the fun and the fine words, the music and the beauty that have been carried across those footlights. And the hard work and the heartache that doesn't get across. Full of ghosts. Listen to the echoes. Heavens, Vicky, what power, what opportunity is given to the people of the stage.
Mm. You must have a touch of the actor in you.
Oh, I have. In the privacy of my room, I've often played most of the roles created by Mr. Shakespeare. If I say so myself, my Hamlet leaves nothing more to be done in that direction. And my Romeo is good for a dozen curtain calls at every performance. What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
So Romeo would. Were he not Romeo called?
Yes, Mr. Shakespeare didn't know his semantics. Might have made a great difference to Juliet if his name were, say, Hezekiah.
Romeo, doth thy name. And for that name, which is no part of me, take all myself.
I take thee at thy word. Call me but love, and I'll be new baptized. Henceforth, I never will be Romeo.
I think he embraces Juliet then.
Oh, no, no. She's up on the balcony. And he's in the orchard below. At least that's the way Shakespeare wrote it.
Well, there's such a thing as taking stage directions too literally, don't you think? Such a love scene really calls for something better than bellowing at each other from a distance.
Yes, I think you're right. Romeo should be up on the balcony by that time with one arm around her.
Not both?
No, he holds onto the railing with the other. Something like this.
Yes. It works out rather well, doesn't it?
With love's light wings did I o'er perch these walls. For stony limits cannot hold love out. And what love can do, that dares love attempt. What love can do, that dares love attempt. Victoria.
Yes?
May I ask you something?
Yes.
Do you think Bacon really wrote Shakespeare's plays?
Does that really concern you right now?
No. No, that was shyness speaking, not I. Victoria, I... Listen. Listen to the song that man in the street is playing.
Oh, yes. It's the old apple song.
Yes. Straight from the hedgerows in the heart of England. I once heard the words, but I've forgotten them.
Oh, you remember. I'll give my love an apple without any core. I'll give her a house without any door. I'll give her a palace wherein she may be, and she may unlock it without any key.
Yes, it comes back to me now. I remember the ending. My heart is the palace wherein she may be, and she may unlock it without any key.
Toddy?
Dr. Hall, how wonderful. I didn't know you could play.
Well, what makes you think I'm playing? I'm quite sincere.
Toddy, it's Professor Quintanon.
Well, it makes no difference. He has no right to impugn my motives. I've never philandered. And
Professor Quintanon, darling.
Who, what? Who? Oh! Quintanon.
William, where have you been?
Over to London, kissing a queen.
Why, you could have knocked me down with a feather. I stepped out for a breather, heard music from over here, and why on earth did you tell me you could play a musical instrument when I asked you?
I did tell you. I distinctly said I could play the fiddle flute.
Yes, I heard you, but naturally I thought you were pulling my leg. After all, a fiddle flute.
It's a very ancient and honorable instrument. And possessed of a really lovely tone.
Well, look here. Wouldn't you like to come over to my house,
To your house?
Yes, you remember. The Ivy Chamber Music and Knockwurst Society.
Oh, there. Is that tonight? Vicky, do you hear?
Yes,
don't you remember my telling you?
And I'd quite forgotten.
Oh, come over now. We'd be delighted to have you join.
Would you really? Oh, I don't know. I really hadn't thought about it, and it's rather late.
Dr. Hall is more the cerebral type, Professor. You know, the quiet walk, the good book, the solitary meditation.
Victoria, please, let me. I'll handle this.
Like Professor Heaslip, the well-known Glockenspiel enthusiast.
Well, I'm sorry, Doctor. I just thought...
No. I accept your invitation gladly. Let's go.
Good. Come on.
Any knockwurst left? Victoria, don't wait up for me, my dear, will you? Where's that pickle? Never mind, I have it. Will I need a hat? No, I guess it's just across the street. Come on, Quincannon. Good night, darling.
Good night. Have a lovely time.
Good night, Mrs. Hall.
Good night.
Why on earth is it called a fiddle flute?
Because it's equipped with a fip. I mean, it's a flute with a quipperfiddle.
Well, you clarified the matter with an obscurity. What is a fiddle?
A small plug in the upper end.
Oh. I thought perhaps Fipple was the name of its inventor.
By an odd coincidence, his name was Fipple. Johann Sebastian Fipple.
Small man with two heads?
Three heads. Oh. He billed himself as the Fipple Trio. Available for parties, weddings, and fish fries. No boozer, no chaser, have own tuxedo, will travel.
One night stand?
Only in the Arctic Circle, 6 months engagement.
Evidently not afraid of critical harpoons.
His skin was thick enough to withstand them.
I suppose, like the saxophone, the fiddle flute has been called an ill woodwind that nobody blows good.
The fiddle flute is an intellectual instrument. It does not depend on sax appeal.
For me's sake, how long can you keep this up?
Until the memory of man runneth not to the contrary and the Knuckworth has departed.
Good. I think we'll have a great evening.
Yes.
Here we are.
What the heck do we
mean? Ready, Doctor? What?
Raise the curtain, Professor, and give me a chord in G.
In we go.
Here. What the heck do we care now?
Worry too much. Take things much too seriously.
It's possible, Vicky. Quite possible.
For example, now take this evening. All those faculty members are very fond of you. But how could they possibly know you weren't pulling their legs when you said you played a fiddle flute?
Yes, there's that, of course. And I did have a wonderful time at Quincannon. Yes, maybe you're right. But I'm afraid I can't finish out my term as president of Ivy College, romping through the weeks with gay shrieks of carefree laughter and witticisms for one and all. It's a matter of record, I believe, that those college presidents who have been more staid have.
Have what?
Stayed.
I see. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
We'll be seeing you next week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Fulton. The other players were Gloria Gordon, Alan Reed, Cliff Arquette, and Frank Martin. Tonight's script was written by Walter Brown Newman and Don Quinn. Our music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Nat Wolf, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
The Halls of Ivy on Tuned to Yesterday from April 7th, 1950 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.